Now, a survey earlier this year found that one in four health fund members considered dropping their health cover in the last year as premiums rose above the inflation rate. Now, in response, Federal Health Minister Susan Ley established a private health advisory committee to address the concerns of fund members who say the current system was frustrating and did not offer good value for money. Joining us now is Dr. Rachel David, who's the CEO of Private Healthcare Australia. Dr. David, welcome.
Hi, Kaylee.
Thank you so much for your time tonight. Can I call you Rachel?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Now, our members are telling us it's a cost issue, and are we getting good value for money? Because they're telling us that they don't feel they are.
Look, I completely understand why people are hurting on the issue of private health insurance premiums. We're seeing that health inflation, or the rise in health costs, is going up at 6 to 7% every year, and that includes in the public sector as well. But household incomes have remained pretty flat at about 1 to 2% per year. So really that can't go on indefinitely, which is why we're working with the federal government, and the federal government is doing some of the very important things it needs to do to help bend the cost curve and keep health costs under control. Now, one of the problems that we have as health funds is that by and large the input costs, like the cost of hospital beds, the cost of medical specialist gaps, and the cost of allied health and medical devices, aren't within our control. But there is waste in the system, and there are regulations that don't make sense anymore, which we're working on with the government to help address.
Okay, now a lot of people complaining that also that it's too difficult to compare policies, especially when there are reportedly nearly 40,000 in the market. Is why are there so many? Why do we have to have that many, or do we have to have that many?
Look, we also think there's been an issue, and one of the reasons that that's occurred is because of the high cost of healthcare. Health funds have been finding new and different ways to try and keep costs down for different age groups. So they've introduced products with exclusions which appeal to younger people. So they tend to exclude treatment areas which younger people don't necessarily need, like hip replacements and knee replacements. And that means that as the number of products like this has proliferated, it's harder for people to understand what they're actually buying. And we've looked at some really very simple ways that we can make this process easier for people so that they get a product that not only they can afford, but also that makes sense for them given their health status.
Hi Rachel, it's Luke here. I've got a couple of questions. One, I have belonged to my private healthcare fund for 12 years, 15 years.
Yep.
And I just sail along, I keep paying the premiums, I've never shopped around. I wonder how many people like me are there out there that just get in their comfort zone and stay. The other thing that really annoys me, and Kat, I bet you relate to this, this huge gap I've still got to pay.
Yeah, I was getting to the gap.
Why am I paying these enormous premiums?
Yeah.
And I've still got this gap. Remember I told you I wanted to get that tooth done?
Hmm.
And it was $3,000.
Yeah. I'm sure Rachel will address this, Rachel, that the gap comes from the specialists, not so much from the health funds.
Yeah, look, that's right. And this is an issue that's been in the Australian health system forever. And it's one that's actually enshrined in the Constitution that health funds can't control what private specialists charge. What we can do is we can cover the gap for the Medicare benefit scheduled fees. So there's a certain amount the patient's reimbursed, and there's a certain legislated gap that we can cover. But a lot of doctors and dentists charge above that. And the only way that health funds are able to cover that extra fee is if those doctors enter into an individual contract with the health fund to cover it, and even then it can't be an indefinite amount because then premiums would go up even more. So it has to be a modest agreed amount above the scheduled fee for those doctors. One thing we are looking at doing, however, and we've had a lot of discussions with consumers and general practitioners about this, is to look at ways to provide information to GPs about what different specialists charge, so they can help direct consumers to specialists that not only meet their needs in terms of what treatments they can provide, but also who don't necessarily charge as much if price is important to those patients. Now, that we have the technology available to make that information available, but we're just looking at the best way to do it at the moment in consultation with the medical profession.
But can't we make that information accessible to the public rather than giving the doctor some guidelines and saying, well, these are, you know, if you recommend your patients to XYZ specialist, it's going to be cheaper. Why can't patients, see what those costs are and then go to their GP and say, I want to see this specialist because it's not going to cost me as much?
Look, we're doing, like, some of the funds are doing that as well and are working on some internet technology and with some websites to do that as well. And there are a large number of doctors, actually, and specialists who actually want to promote to a much wider audience and referral base that actually they don't charge very much. But one, through our market research, and we do a lot of customer research, we found that most patients, if they need to see a specialist, want to have the discussion with their GP. We found about 70% of people actually, even if they found online that a specialist was really cheap, they want to cross-check that with their GP to make sure that guy or woman is actually qualified enough to treat them for their condition. And so we're basically, by looking at involving the GP or the referring doctor in the loop, we're looking at meeting a consumer need.
Hmm. Who decides the Medicare schedule fee? Is that the government?
That's the federal government, yes.
Let me a question I'll ask the minister a bit later. But who can anyone rein in the doctors and the dentists? Or are they just free to charge whatever they want?
Look, it's been for a very long time, it's been the case in Australia that specialists can set their own fees. However, when you actually look particularly at medical specialists, the group that charges very, very high gaps is actually pretty small. And there's a market there as well. So if you look at, but it's just that consumers don't have a lot of access to it. They don't have visibility on it. So basically, if you look at communities where average incomes are high and there are very few medical specialists like Canberra in the ACT, you'll find that gaps are higher. If you look at, say, a community like in South Australia where there are large numbers of specialists but incomes are lower, gaps are lower as well. Now, because consumers don't have access to that information, it means that for the percentage of them for whom price is really important, they can't make that choice. And what would be nice is if your GP in the ACT, for example, could tell you, look, if you just drove 2 hours down the road, you'd actually be able to get this knee reconstruction with no out-of-pocket, or half the out-of-pocket you get in Canberra. And that's what we're shooting for, to give consumers the transparency on what's actually happening so they can access the market that's there.
We're talking to Dr. Rachel David from Private Healthcare Australia. If you've got any questions for her, you're welcome to call us on 13 12 83. Now, Rachel, what do you think of the idea of a medical savings plan? One that's been suggested is a combination of the one I saw was of super and health savings accounts where the funds generated could be used to pay both for old age health costs and to increase retirement incomes.
Look, I think we are happy to obviously consider all policy changes which might make things easier for people. But I think there are a few traps here, and I'll just run through them. It sounds very easy. But if you think about it, what health insurance does in Australia is it helps spread the risk of very high cost of care over quite a big community under the community rating system, so that if you do have the propensity to have a lot of pre-existing conditions, you'll actually be covered the same as, if you have the same sort of policy as someone who's pretty healthy. Now, if you move to a health savings account, all the risk is on you. It's a risk-rated system. And given that half the people with private health insurance at the moment have a disposable income of $50,000 a year or less, this could be a very big impost. Just a normal standard hip replacement in Australia costs anything between $28,000 and $80,000.
Wow,
now imagine if you needed a few of those procedures, how much money you'd need to save. And Australians are already having trouble saving enough for their retirement. So the beauty of health insurance is that it actually spreads that risk across the whole community. And the trouble is, in a lot of countries which tried health savings accounts, they've started out having health as a fairly low cost system. Like in Singapore, it's only about 4.9% of GDP. In Australia, health is a much bigger part of GDP. It's about 9.6%.
About 10%. Yeah.
So, you know, it started out with that, and now the costs are blowing out because of all of the higher incidence of chronic disease as we're living longer. And health savings accounts are fine to have, but if you're saving for the odd procedure, like the odd chipped tooth. But if you're looking at managing chronic disease from now until you're 90, it's a very different proposition. And in fact, not really that different from just self-insuring. And it's, I think that would be very difficult for the average Australian to achieve and to appropriately assess their own risk, which is why it's a policy idea that's really been repeatedly rejected, actually, by successive governments.
Yeah, we're talking to Dr. Rachel David, CEO of Private Healthcare Australia. Steve, g'day.
Yeah, g'day. Hi, Doctor.
Hi, how are you, Steve?
I'm well, thank you. I'd just like to ask, I pay premium coverage in a healthcare I had for the last 35 years. I just had my prostate removed because I had a bit of cancer. I'm all good now. But I was out of pocket $12,000 in my health care.
And you've got top cover. Cover, and it cost 12 large.
That's correct. Oh. And they don't cover that sort of surgery. See, and I just find that a joke.
Why would you pay a premium?
This is a really tough one, and prostate cancer is a tough treatment area. And I'll run through, and bear in mind, I am medically trained, but I'm not a specialist in either cancer treatment or urology, which is a specialty that normally treats prostate cancer. But I do have an explanation for what happens. And that is that when urologists or prostate cancer specialists charge those high gaps, what they're covering for is treatment by a technology called what they call a prostate cancer robot. But it's really a way of assisting the surgeon to do the procedure in a particular way. And it's a technology that's not covered necessarily. The cost of the actual machine is not covered under the Medicare system, and there's not really a mechanism to cover it in private. So that's what the surgeons are charging for.
Yeah, but this is not elective surgery. This is life-saving.
No, absolutely, I totally understand. And I think one of the issues is that the treatment in the private sector, because if you were treated in the public sector, it would be free of charge. They actually have to recover that cost from you. There's no other way of doing that at the moment. So
if I'd had surgery the old way and not robotic, I wouldn't have cost that sort of money. Is that what you're saying?
That's what we've seen, and that's what we see through our claims. Yes, that if you had surgery the old way, it doesn't necessarily attract those gaps. And if you'd had surgery in the public sector, it doesn't necessarily attract those gaps. Now, I'm not saying that I can't comment on your individual situation. That treatment may well have been right and the best treatment for you, but the issue is it is free of charge in the public sector, and the issue is this robot that the surgeons are trying to cover the costs of. And at the moment, this might change in future, but at the moment, the evidence suggests that the two procedures, the non-robot, the manual procedure and the robot procedure, the outcomes are the same, which is why the government hasn't stepped in to cover the cost of the robot yet.
Steve, was there a reason why you didn't go public?
Well, I got diagnosed with prostate cancer and I needed it done ASAP. My whole prostate was full of cancer. It was actually starting to penetrate outside of my prostate. My specialist told me that if I'd waited another 6 to 12 months, it could have been a different story altogether.
Yeah. Look, this is difficult because when people, you know, this is a very serious situation for people to be in, and often, you know, if I was in that position, I would just want anything to treat the cancer, and often money isn't your first concern, which is why we need to do better in the health system and work together to make sure patients aren't necessarily put in this position.
Yeah. Steve, thank you so much for your call. Rachel, compared to other types of insurance, like property insurance and general insurance, health funds sort of paying out as much or less or more?
Generally, health funds pay out more than general insurance. So if you take every dollar of the premium in general insurance, you'd probably that pay out about 67 cents in the dollar. For health insurance, it's much higher. It's an average of all the funds, 86.1 cents in the dollar. And the reason for that is that not only does health insurance function as genuine insurance, i.e. covering the cost of very high claims, but it also provides reimbursement for a number of allied health services like dental and physio as well. So it's got the two functions. So it's what we call a claims ratio. Its payout ratio is actually pretty high.
Do you think, one final question, do you think that the industry, the private health industry, is healthy, considered it, you know, it needs a $6 billion annual subsidy via the 30% rebate to keep going? Do you think that's a sign of a healthy system?
Look, the rebate was introduced some years ago by the Howard Coalition government at a time when the health insurance industry was very sick. Hospital cover had dropped to 30% of the population and only really high claimers were left in private health insurance, so the premium increases were really, really big. Now, since that time, the rebate is no longer, it's now, at the time it wasn't means tested, it's now means tested. And it's also been tied to CPI, so it's indexed to inflation, not indexed to premium increases, so its value is actually diminishing. So at the beginning, it was a $6 billion rebate. Now, if you look at tax returns and tax receipts, the actual rebate paid out by the government is $3.7 billion. So it's quite a lot lower. The fact that it is diminishing with time is putting, obviously, for low and middle income earners, upward pressure on premiums. And what that means is that every dollar of waste in the system and every bit of unnecessary or wasteful care or inflated medical device pricing that health funds are paying for, we need to address that to put downward pressure on premiums, because we just don't have the backup of the 30% rebate anymore.
Thank you so much for your time tonight. You've cleared a lot of things up for us. Dr. Rachel David there, CEO of Private Healthcare Australia. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more after the break.